G'day, Francis here. Now, finding out accurate info about your rights at work and what wages you should be paid can be difficult. So why not give the Australian Union Support Centre a call? It's completely free and confidential, and the Support Centre is completely independent. Their number is 1300 486 466. 1300 486 466.
On the Job with Francis Leach and Sally Rudd.
Welcome to On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. My name is Francis Leach and I am flying solo today. Sally Rugg, who is my usual co-host, unavailable for us this week. She's on assignment, as they say in the business. So you're stuck with me. But it's going to be a great conversation coming up because the times, they are a-changing, just like Bob said all those years ago, with the recent announcements in the United States that, hey, suddenly someone in power has realised climate change is a big deal. And for American industry, like here in Australia, to survive, adapt and provide the sort of jobs that we think we deserve, good paying, secure, decent work, there's an opportunity along with the crisis. So after Joe Biden's announcement just a couple of weeks ago that the United States is going full throttle on transforming its industry and driving it with climate change initiatives designed to bring down emissions and improve the quality of jobs in new fields, new technologies and new opportunities, is Australia in a position to do likewise? Because if we don't, we're faced with something of a challenge. We can be a climate technology innovator and a world leader in this area, or, as we're currently heading, we can be a climate client state to other countries that are going to provide that technology, those job opportunities to their people, whilst we purchase the goods and services that they create in clean energy environments. We become, in that case, something of a climate banana republic, which is nowhere that we want to be. So how do we do it? We know Australia's got particular challenges, particularly with our reliance on fossil-based fuel industries and the incredible communities who have built up over generations a history of proud work and achievement, raising families and building strong communities. How do we take everyone with us on this journey so that nobody misses out and everybody can bear some sort of benefit from the fruits of a new future where zero emissions is a reality, decent jobs and pay are also part of the equation, and we can look forward to the future with confidence and excitement about what it has to offer? Well, we've got a couple of people who can tell us all about it. One of them is Dr. Simon Bradshaw from the Climate Council, and we'll catch up with him right now.
We know what to do. We've just got to do it. When we think of climate change, we think of it, this is a case where conscience and convenience cross paths, where dealing with this existential threat to the planet and increasing our economic growth and prosperity are one and the same. When I think of climate change, I think of, and the answers to it, I think of jobs. A key plank of our Build Back Better recovery plan is building a modern, resilient climate infrastructure and clean energy future that will create millions of good-paying union jobs, not $7, $8, $10, $12 an hour, but prevailing wage.
U.S. President Joe Biden there making the announcement that many Americans were waiting for, that the United States is once again full bottle on pursuing a clean energy future and one, as he said there, that delivers real and sustainable jobs for communities across the country. Well, can we do the same thing here in Australia? Certainly, after a decade of paralysis when it comes to climate and energy policy, we're starting to slip behind the eight ball, but that doesn't mean those opportunities are lost to us. Dr. Simon Bradshaw is with the Climate Council, an organisation that monitors very closely Australia's approach and the global approach towards transitioning from fossil fuel economies, reducing climate change impact, and opportunities that present themselves for a future without emissions. And he joins us here on the job to talk about it. Simon, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Francis. G'day. Good to be with you.
It was a remarkable thing to see a United States president get up and speak like Biden did about the need for change, that it has to happen, and that it has to include, justice for workers, clean, useful, productive, sustainable jobs that pay well, which is, you know, that's the fork in the road for many Australians when it comes to taking real action on climate change. So let's start. Where are we at? Are we slipping behind the eight ball when it comes to being able to match major countries like the United States in making that change?
We're certainly behind the eight ball at the moment, but to answer your question, you know, can we pull off a similar thing? Can we rebuild our economy with great jobs through clean energy? Absolutely we can. And one thing about Australia is there are very few countries that are as vulnerable to the impacts of climate change as we are, which we can talk more about. But the flip side of that is I can't think of anywhere that has the same natural advantages, the same foundations that we could be building on when it comes to clean energy jobs of the future. We really do have some of the world's best clean energy potential. We've got immense expertise here. We've clearly got great public goodwill when it comes to making a good managed transition. So it's really just that political leadership that's holding us back at the moment. Splendid to see Biden come out so strong right at the start of his presidency. And as you pointed out, and it struck me straight away, it's all about jobs, and it's all about good jobs, cooperating with unions to build good, secure future work. And we've absolutely got that potential here in Australia too.
You've watched this over the last decade be stuck in a ditch. So if you have to give us your analysis as to why we haven't been able to progress towards a solution with clean jobs and new technologies that will build a new economy, what are the key elements that are stopping us?
So it's become very much an ideological battle in Australia. And we've probably all seen this play out. We've, I'm sure, all screamed at our radio or the newspaper many times watching the latest political spat over climate change. And the frustrating thing is, you know, we've got that potential to do so much better. We've got increasingly strong signals from the business sector, including big institutional investors. We've got, you know, strong calls coming from many unions as well, saying we've got to be straight with the Australian people. We've got to start recognizing the transition we need to make, and we've got to start unlocking our potential here. It's almost become something of a culture war over the years, which we're still seeing play out. Of course, there is the role of money in politics and vested interests as well that inevitably has an influence here as it has had in the US and everywhere else. If we're to take some hope at this point, though, and I think for anyone watching the climate crisis and the world's response play out, it's always that mix of, you know, terror and then real hope and excitement as well. It's hard to overstate the significance of having the US back in the game, but that's just the latest in a whole string of things we've seen the last few months. We had first China, then Japan, then South Korea, three of our biggest trading partners who've been buying a lot of our fossil fuel exports, all commit themselves to net zero emissions by around mid-century, all strengthening their commitments for the near term. That's got big implications for Australia. And we're starting to see pressure really come from all directions, from our international peers, from Australian workers. And so it's hard to see that the Australian government's position of continuing to stall on this is going to be sustainable for much longer. And we're at the start of what's now a very critical year leading up to a crucial round of international negotiations in Glasgow at the end of the year. And the pressure on Australia to step up climate action, accelerate that transition, and do so in a way that's good for jobs is only going to get bigger over the coming months.
Is it a case now of something of a climate race to be, as I said in my introduction, that we have a choice here? We can be a climate technology future jobs leader, or we can be a climate client state where we're purchasing our technology and clean energy opportunities from other countries because we didn't take the opportunity to actually innovate ourselves and establish ourselves as maybe a net exporter of climate technologies and climate jobs. How much time do you think we've got before we are out of the race altogether?
Well, I think you've described the challenge in the current sorry state of climate politics in Australia very well, because it's absolutely becoming a case of first mover advantage. Those countries that invest now in the clean industries of the future, and of course we're talking about renewable energy, but we're talking about a raft of other industries as well, you know, advanced low carbon manufacturing, ecosystem restoration, energy efficiency, better waste management, smarter agricultural techniques. These are all going to be the building blocks of the post-carbon world. And the sooner we get on with that job, the sooner we're laying the foundations that will ensure, you know, secure work for many generations to come, the more we're going to be building those really exciting clean export industries that you hinted at. Clean hydrogen, for example, is one that's getting a lot of attention. And there's undoubtedly massive potential there, huge potential markets within our corner of the world. it's also one of those sectors where you've got to have the adequate public investments at the front, the long-term planning to really get these things off the ground. And we can be sure that if Australia, despite its natural advantages, doesn't get with the program, we're absolutely going to get behind the big economies of Asia, some of our European peers, and now the US. And these things are moving fast. There are good things happening in Australia, led mainly by the states and territories and by private industry and by community initiatives. But without that clear federal government push, we'll very much get left behind in the race to the new economy.
Dr. Brakshaw, can you give us an understanding of what some of those jobs might look like? I mean, there might be already industries on the horizon, and I think we're going to talk to someone in just a little while who can show us very directly an example of what they've done with the business they've started. But are there jobs that are just in the near future available to Australians and Australian industry if it wants to make that change that could actually, you know, visibly demonstrate to skeptical Australian workers that there is a future and a secure future in jobs in a clean energy economy?
Absolutely. And one exercise we did late last year was to develop a clean jobs plan for Australia, where we tallied up 76,000 jobs around the country across 12 different areas of work. That was, you know, renewable energy, community energy groups, clean hydrogen, ecosystem restoration, waste management, transport, a number of other sectors where with the right investments, where jobs could be created straight away, scaled up over the next 3 years, and then, you know, creating the foundation for resilient long-term recovery. And we deliberately didn't try and, you know, come up with a massive number of millions of jobs that could in theory be created. We looked in very concrete terms at initiatives that were going to align well with existing state and territory policy. We looked particularly at occupations and regions that have been hit hard by the COVID-19 slowdown and where there was a real need to be creating jobs in the near term. And that's what we came up with. And it was a pretty compelling vision. And those are all readily created jobs that can be implemented through states and territory leadership, a lot of them being in the regions, and across a whole raft of professions. We're talking about a whole spectrum of jobs and particularly targeted where they're most needed.
Can you give us an example of some of those jobs that might be just on the horizon?
Absolutely. So I think we've got a number of case studies in there, and I certainly encourage anyone to check out the Climate Council and our Clean Jobs Plan. Some of the ones that really grabbed me, a lot of them are around renewable energy, and for example, 3,000 to 4,000 potential jobs in Victoria alone, both high and low skilled jobs, can be created by investing in renewable energy zones, exactly the same up in Queensland and other parts of the country. We're really talking about the full spectrum of jobs that goes with supporting a big industry. So some of that is on the advanced manufacturing side of things. Some of that is much more in the clerical and administrative side of things, a whole range of different professions that can be created, because ultimately what we're talking about is revitalizing whole regional economies and doing that through, you know, diverse opportunities, all of which are creating the clean economy of the future. We absolutely stress that these need to have, you know, good working conditions, opportunity to join unions, of course. It's great to see Joe Biden really use that imperative as part of his pitch as well. And ultimately, you know, we are talking about the industries of the future that are going to create jobs for generations to come. And when you have the natural advantage that Australia does, the possibilities are really endless.
The cost of transitioning into these new industries is often raised as an issue by those who remain sceptical or have a vested interest in not making the change. Is it astronomical? I mean, is it the sort of cost that might be associated with, I don't know, dealing with a pandemic, for instance, a sort of a generational investment in the change that is going to come at a cost but will deliver a bigger dividend? How do we manage that?
Well, the COVID-19 experience, as devastating as it's been, has definitely been instructive in this way. It has shown, and Australia has fared so well in this regard, that we're willing to listen to the science, take tough decisions, invest up front in order to get us through a crisis and come out better on the other side. And we can look at that with climate change and, you know, rebuilding our energy system and setting ourselves up for the clean economy of the future. Of course, that requires some investment up front, but we have to look at the whole picture and the costs of inaction when we consider the true damage caused by climate change. And a report we put out just last week has shown that the cost of extreme weather disasters for Australia has more than doubled since the 1970s and is set to get much worse, sadly, over the coming decades. And we cited one piece of research that suggested an annual COVID-sized hit to the Australian economy every year within the coming decade. So that's just how much at stake. that's the other side of the cost we have to consider. But looked at through the lens of decent work, the other problem is that if we double down and, you know, pretend the world isn't changing and give communities previously dependent on fossil fuel industries the false promise of decades of ongoing prosperity, that's really being quite brutally unfair and setting people up for a very difficult future and an inevitable crash and, of course, the much better alternative. And we have seen good examples of this in countries like Germany, of getting on the front foot of industries, union, government working together, offering good opportunities for retraining and reskilling, offering generous voluntary redundancies for much older workers, putting money into regions so that they've got the infrastructure to be building new industries. Of course, all of that takes investment. Even more than that, it takes smart policy and forward thinking. But the cost of not doing that, both in terms of the damage to our precious ecosystems, our health, and everything else we care about through climate change, and also the toll that we're placing on our most vulnerable communities around the planet, is far, far greater.
Simon Bradshaw, is it a case that we can't pick winners and losers in this? I mean, regional economies have often been skeptical of, and I hate the phrase used that is often used, transition to a new economy, but that's what we're talking about. Are they likely to be losers in this, and this become a sort of urban bonus that communities in metropolitan areas will be more successful in dealing with the change and we're going to leave people behind?
I don't think anyone can pretend that a transition on this scale is going to be straightforward. I think come back to the fact that Australia, whereas in the past it's had this huge advantage through its fossil fuel reserves, we now arguably have an even bigger advantage through our renewable energy reserves. It's not something that many other countries are blessed with, is having so much to work with when it comes to rebooting our economy. At the macro level, a lot of those opportunities are in regional Australia. Many of them, some of the same places that have been built around traditional industries. Of course, there are communities that for various reasons are not blessed with the same opportunities others have. And the crucial thing there is that we look at this crisis through, or this challenge, it's a crisis, also an opportunity, through their eyes, and get down to that sort of granular level of what does it mean to ensure decent work, a prosperous future in, this pocket of Queensland, for example, and that we put in place the necessary support to do that. And we see that happening in some parts of the world. We'll see it happen in Australia eventually. We need to be focused on leaving no one behind. But the alternative approach of pretending we're going to be digging up fossil fuels for decades to come when the entire world is changing, I really don't think is doing any favours to anyone. And that will create losers because it will have missed the opportunity to really build a decent, secure, better future for everyone.
Are you optimistic that we've got what it takes to make these changes?
I tend to, and I'm sure this is true of a lot of people, look at this day by day. I flip between being terrified and actually being optimistic and excited. It genuinely is an exciting time. I think especially for younger people who are, going through their education, thinking about what they want to do with their careers, because the fact is that with climate change and with rebuilding our economy or revitalizing our economy, we need to change the way we do so much. And we have so many exciting opportunities to be building a better future. Where I do get hopeful is when we see some pretty seismic shifts happening all around the world in developed and developing countries alike, where we see communities around Australia taking matters into their own hands, investing in their own community energy schemes, for example. When we see Indigenous fire practitioners really showing us all how to manage our landscape better. All these exciting things that are going on. And when we see unions, of course, telling it how it is, through a jobs and work lens, and how we can really seize the opportunity for a better future. All the ingredients are there. Of course, we've been held back by a decade and more of squabbles when it comes to federal politics, but the thing I might have said earlier on, we've got a little bit of a perfect storm brewing now, I think, when it comes to that domestic and international pressure and the economics being ever more favourable. And it's hard not to, I think, feel hopeful and optimistic when you put all of that together.
Dr. Bradshaw, great to talk to you. And let's hope that we can actually seize the moment. Thanks for being with us on the job.
Great to talk to you too. Thanks, Francis.
Dr. Simon Bradshaw from the Climate Council there with a view on how Australia is shaping up to deal with the rapidly changing environment and opportunities to embrace a clean climate economy. After this, though, we are going to meet someone who's already doing it, a person who's decided that clean energy is, in fact, the future and the way to go, and not only decided that was needed, but put his money where his heart and mouth was and started a business doing exactly that.
G'day, Francis here. Now, finding out accurate info about your rights at work and what wages you should be paid can be difficult. So why not give the Australian Union Support Centre a call? It's completely free and confidential, and the Support Centre is completely independent. Their number is 1300 486 466. 1300 486 466.
You're listening to On The Job, the podcast all about making working life better. And we're talking about the possibility of a clean energy economy. Can Australia do it? The last 10 years, we've been reluctant to make the changes, but not everybody, because Luciano Giangiordano is from Enertech, which is a solar company, which he started up because he believes, well, it's the right thing to do. It's where the future is, and it's the only way forward for Australia as a country and our economy. But how's it going with this? And what are the practicalities of running your own business? And can you find good, sustainable jobs in a new economy? It's only early days, but he's having a decent crack, and he joins us now on the podcast via Skype. G'day, Luciano. How are you going?
Good morning, Francis. Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm not bad, mate. Tell us about why and how you started your company.
Back in the middle 2000s, I was just come back from working overseas, and I got a job in the mining industry, and I was there for about 6 months. I had a goal of, you know, saving some money and buying some land and doing all that. Then after 6 months, I thought, what am I doing here? I'm just digging holes in rocks and sending rocks overseas. And I had a bit of a crisis, so I left, went back to university and did a couple of degrees, master's degrees, which led me then to project management. And I applied for a job with a big solar power company in China. They were manufacturing solar panels and solar cells. So I applied, got the job, moved to China, and it took off from there. That led to, you know, international business development. Then that led me to working in Abu Dhabi for a couple of years, setting up a renewable energy company there. Then 2014, I got tired of all the foreign culture and foreign food, so I came home and started up here.
How hard was it? And particularly, how hard was it having had that international experience and coming back to an Australia which had something of a, you know, like a stalemate when it came to climate, energy and industry policy? We weren't going anywhere on it. And you've landed going, hey, I've done all this other stuff overseas and this is what they're doing. This is the future. And you arrived here and everyone's going, nah, coal. Coal's still your friend.
Yeah, it was quite a shock, Francis. I came back, some of my friends had moved into it. They were engineers. They were doing solar. And at that stage, you know, there were just the normal little 1 and 3 kilowatt systems on the roof, you know, subsidized by the government. For them, a 10 kilowatt system was big. And I thought, wow, we're so far behind the eight ball here. You know, we were doing 20, 30 megawatt projects overseas. So I thought, well, this is an opportunity here. So I set up a company called Project Brainstorm, which specialised in commercial solar power. So we went out, we were the first ones to start pushing, you know, 20, 30, 40 kilowatt solar systems for businesses and factories. And then, you know, we hit the proverbial wall with our heavy reliance on regulators and rules and regs, which were designed under, you know, the John Howard regime back in the late 90s. So they were no longer fit, in my opinion. They're not fit for purpose. They were designed with an old, you know, centralized architecture in mind for coal and predominantly coal and gas-fired power stations. So trying to get systems even at 20 or 30 kilowatts proved problematic. But over time, the network service providers, you know, started to look at it, started allowing that. And I did that for a couple of years and then realized everybody else was moving into that space. So I moved up the food chain into utility scale and into solar farm development. And now I'm dealing with the headaches that come along with that industry.
What are some of the headaches that you've found the most difficult to deal with?
Well, the legacy issues of the Australian grids were never designed to have, you know, dispatchable, decentralised power. They were always designed to have big coal-fired power stations sending electrons over great distances on thin, flimsy networks. So it's a little bit like having, you know, a one-lane highway, Francis, going one direction, high speed. But if you want to then put smaller, decentralized generators onto that network, you're running against the traffic, if you like, in a lot of areas. So we have to redesign it from the ground up. And on top of the technical and engineering issues, then we've got the regulators that are trying to keep the lights So there's a lot there. And because we don't have an overarching agreement from Canberra, the federal government has been playing political games for so long. It's been left to the states and councils and businesses to try to work around it.
Can I ask you about your assessment of that culture and whether it will change quickly? Because we just saw, we've been talking about this on the podcast today, Joe Biden's announcement a couple of weeks ago that the United States was all in now on a new economy built on clean energy, good, well-paying jobs, union jobs, he said as well. And it can be done. You can have both. You can have a clean energy future and good, sustainable jobs where people feel like they belong in their communities, they're earning a decent living, and they're living in a clean environment. Do you see Australia being a long way away from that?
There is hope, but like you said, there's a whole cultural change and a paradigm shift that has to happen. The political kind of narrative has been lacking, and as they've tried to dumb it all down and simplify it, saying, well, let's just transition from fossil fuels to renewables. What I see is that on top of that, we need to start getting a lot smarter. It's not a like for like. So we need to look at not just replacing it with solar and wind, but other, you know, smart technologies. For example, you know, demand management, which means the grid should respond to the demand as it happens, not having all this base load sitting in the background, ready to go, and then, you know, having lots of burning coal just being wasted. So there's technology now that can allow us to become much smarter. And all of this transactional network that has to change has to also be considered. So we need to collaborate with industry, universities, and high-tech companies like blockchain, for example. You know, everybody knows blockchain is the base layer for Bitcoin, but it can also be used for peer-to-peer trading of power and getting devices and networks speaking to each other. Then the other layer we need to look at is transportation. So instead of everybody having a battery in their house on the wall, you know, we have cars, trains, buses, auto transport as a solar sponge. So when there's lots of power in the network, you know, we can send a message to their mobile phone saying, okay, you know, for the next hour or two, if you want cheap power, just connect to the grid, allow the excess of solar and wind to be stored for later on for that demand management peak period when people come home from work or first thing in the morning when people get up. So there's a lot of jobs there if we can think outside of the box, you know, replacing like for like. We need to really get smart and develop smart systems.
You live and work in regional Queensland, and regional Queensland has been the centre of a lot of Australia's coal mining industry. And those communities are deeply embedded in the culture of coal mining. They're very proud of their coal mining history and the work that it's provided for generations of Australian workers. How hard is it going to be to convince the people that you live and work around that this is a future that has something for them in it?
Yeah, this is one of the challenges that we need to approach from a different angle. You know, it's been very politically charged between, you know, the conservative side of politics and the more progressive. If we can approach it from a holistic perspective, saying, look, we all need to retrain, you know, just like I did back in 2007, 8, 9 and 10, I took basically 4 years going back to university to get, you know, a master's degree in project management and a master's degree in international relations. And that has paid off huge dividends. For coal miners and, you know, electricians that have been used to business as usual, we need to be able to support them in the transition and get them to move up the food chain and increase their options of employment by getting much smarter and collaborating in a different way. I think it can be done. It just needs the political willpower from Canberra. If we have an overarching policy that all the state governments can plug into, that would be great. But at the moment, as you know, it's held on a state-by-state, region-by-region discussion, and that's where the division keeps us apart, you know. I met with the unions last year because there was some issues around, you know, the unions thought that we developers are making squillions of dollars and we were trying to cut them out of the cake. And when I explained to them the difficulty with the regulations and connecting to the grid and how much money it was costing just to make an application, they were gobsmacked and they said, oh, we weren't aware of this. So we need to start having, you know, lateral discussions across the industry, including unions, and tech companies and investors, you know.
But you're obviously an optimist by nature. You wouldn't be doing the work you do. Do you think there's a sustainable, good job future for Australian workers in the sort of work that you're doing?
I used to call myself an optimist, Francis. I now call myself a possibilist.
I like that.
Because optimism has led to all kinds of, you know, dreams and shattered dreams. And, you know, great outcomes are all destroyed along the path of good intent. Anything is possible if we can just start to realize that we're being sold all kinds of propaganda by mainstream media with its own vested interests that are trying to keep things the same. Change is happening and it's coming. And that keeps me inspired to get up out of bed every morning. But it's happening in spite of the political games in Canberra, not because of the political games in Canberra.
And it will happen regardless of the political games in Canberra. Luciano, it's been great talking to you. You're an inspiration, and we wish you all the best with this year. I hope it's a sunny time up at Enertech, and you're being able to refashion the grid despite all the stasis in Canberra around our energy policy.
Thank you very much, Francis. Thanks for your time. It's actually grey, cloudy and raining here, so we'll take it. Possible the sun will come out this afternoon, though.
Yeah, possible as to the end. Luciano Giangiordano there from Enertech, a solar company, talking to us about how he invested his future in a clean energy economy and put his money where his mouth is and got about making a future for himself in the clean energy business. That's it for On The Job for this week's podcast. Ellie will be back next week. My name is Francis Leake. Don't forget, you can follow us by subscribing to the podcast on your favourite podcast platform. Let your friends know about us as well. Give us a rating and it helps us bump us up the charts and more people can find us, and we'll catch you next week on The Job. On the job.